702.
WhatsApp Profilwe.
On 072 702 1702.
It's a personal finance Sunday, which means we talk to our certified financial planner, Paul Rolofser, and he brings us topics, matters of interest, concern, or just reminds us to take care of the basics, right? As he does so incredibly well. But today, Paul is asking the question, what to make of the proposed new state pension fund. The South Africans may be required to contribute up to 12% of their earnings to a new government-backed fund, according to a new proposal from the Department of Social Development. This was gazetted in the Green Paper on Comprehensive Social Security and Retirement Reform, which proposes the creation of a new National Social Security Fund, the NSSF, which would be a government-managed fund, which will provide retirement, disability benefits, and unemployment benefits. Let's learn more about this and unpack this a little further. Paul Rolofser, good morning. Hi.
Hi, Rafi. Well, you said it certainly is a well-intended project, I think, in the sense that it's much needed. It's aimed at trying to widen the social security net that we have. And I think the intentions are great, and I think it's important that we do have something in place like this. But I think I'm afraid the concerns lie in the details.
Sure.
And it raises a lot more questions, I think, at this point. And look, it's only a green paper, as you mentioned, and it's still got a long way to journey its way through before it becomes law or it is enacted. But the questions loom. I just, for a start, have the sort of cynical question. You know, at this point in time, we have failed state-owned enterprises. We have a lot of work to get back on our feet in terms of getting the feasibility back in those places. And this particular fund is really pegged to be state-funded, state-managed, so to speak.
Yeah.
So we have to, you know, and I know the cynics will say, well, you know, you didn't get the rest right, so what's going to happen to this fund will be the big question. How will it be managed? Where will the funds be invested for a start? But I mean, before we even get there, the practicalities of it right now are another question. If you take an earner of, say, 20,000 rand per month, and he or she is on a 15% contribution towards an existing pension fund,
mm-hmm.
The legislation or this paper points to him or her having to put an additional 2,400 rand over and above the current 3,000 that he is already saving into this new fund. And I'm afraid right now with the pandemic and its devastation, where we can't quite afford to save right now, where are you going to find that extra money is the question. So I think what will probably happen there is there's going to have to be a split between the current contribution towards this fund.
Mm.
And in that particular case, that 2,400 Rand will go across to the state pension, leaving only 600 Rand left in the private sector.
Mm.
So how does that play out?
And it
starts to create some very big questions, I think.
Well, yeah, part of those big questions being your ability to opt out of what you have deemed to be functional, well-run, well-administered versus something you're skeptical about. Just to unpack that further for us, Paul, because, I mean, you say cynics might say, well, you know, so many of our state, you know, our state-owned enterprises are in crisis and have been for a long time. So the expertise, the political will to have cleanly run entities doesn't seem to be there. You know, we've just come off the back of, what, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, the president testifying at the Zondo Commission, skirting around the issue of the deployment policies of the ruling party and, you know, effectively leaving us with nowhere to leave or at least assign our anger, our frustrations, you know. So where does the buck stop? And in a situation like this, putting more money into the public purse?
Sure. And, you know, there again, it can be seen as a way of just transferring the money across to the state, you know, which is sitting very well managed inside the private sector right now. You know, we do have a very reputable pension industry. It stands tall worldwide as well, and it's well oiled, well managed, It's full of efficiencies. Now we've just been forced to move across. So yes, that one question will obviously have to be answered. And I think in the journey to where it's going to be enacted, it's going to be have to be scrutinized ruthlessly. And at the same time, I think there's going to be a lot of questions and proposals to counter what's on the table right now from the industry, because the industry itself, as the private sector, is certainly under threat around this, because I don't see us finding the extra. I think it's definitely going to move across where we've got some certain fundings right now, which will just simply shift across.
Yeah.
And as you point to it, we've got to have the competency and the credibility to assure that that money will be managed the way it could and should.
Sure. Paul, in terms of, sort of best practice, if we look around and we say, okay, there exist very well-run state pension funds in other economies and other states, but we obviously want to compare apples with apples, and we want to look at scenarios where it's been done in a country such as ours, at least that matches our economic profile. Where do we look to?
Well, there are some very good funds, as you mentioned, all over the world, really, that are well managed. But the complication that has actually sort of threatened them is that they're all what we call defined benefit funds, which means that one day when you reach that pensionable age, you are guaranteed a specific pension for the rest of your retirement. And it also has functions of adjusting to inflation along the way and things like that. And some of them are very, very well managed in the context of the benefits. But they've all come under threat because we also have this other problem where we are all living longer. And that has a direct impact on the provisions and the way that the sustainability of that particular fund is set up. So we would have to take that into account very carefully. And what the other funds have had to do is they've had to stretch out their retirement ages. Some of the European countries have gone, and where it might have been 65, they've pushed it out to 67 or 68, and some of them even 70.
Okay.
So they have to be very, very well managed in the context of being a defined benefit, because these funds do have to produce that pension. It's not like yours and my retirement fund where we invest, and it's up to the investment performance to produce our pension. And if it does well, we do well. If it doesn't, we don't. A defined benefit fund takes on a huge obligation for its pool of members to ensure that they have enough funding to see them right through their retirement age. So it's going to have to be really, really well managed. And I'm sure there are models out there which we can follow and learn from. But I step back at this point in time, and obviously you've got credibility issues, competencies that we've got to make sure are in place. And I think the practicality too at this point, where people simply can't afford it, leans towards a threat towards the private sector, which is simply going to have diminished funds, whereas the new fund is obviously going to be compulsory, so it gets best price in terms of any allocation.
Sure. Interesting. Obviously, as we've spoken about the fact that it is a green paper, it's being gazetted. It's going to be a long process before this it finally gets to a stage where it becomes legislation, right? Where it finally becomes an act. But, we do have a fundamental problem, which is what we talk about, actually, in essence, every Sunday. And that is, unfortunately, the rate at which South Africans don't actually save for retirement, right? The Federation of Unions of South Africa is saying that only one in every three South African adults has some form of pension. So a dismal rate at which we're planning for old age for retirement, never mind financial independence, Paul.
Yeah, sure. And that's the crux of the matter, I think. If you can't, at this point in time, save more than 2% of your disposable income, which is our average at the moment, where you're going to find an extra 12%? That's really the dichotomy in this debate. So a lot of work will still have to be done, and I'm sure a lot of expertise and input from the industries will come into play. And like you said, it's still a long while, and I think a lot of work to be done on it.
Yep. Paul Relufsa, thank you so much for bringing us this interesting and important conversation. Look forward to chatting again to you next Sunday.